All right, so let's start with our talk for today. Now, the topic, do you understand the topic? There's a lot of technical terms in the topic. So we have emptiness, we have nirvana, and we have liberation. Does it make any sense to you? All right, so I think we need to explain all these terms first, and then we link them together. Now, so before we go to talk about emptiness and nirvana, I just like to talk about the word liberation. So we say that we talk about the path to liberation. So in other words, we are searching for liberation. Are you searching for liberation? What do you want to be liberated from? Pardon?
Unhappiness.
So you want to be liberated from unhappiness. That's very good. Any other things that you want to be liberated from?
Exams.
You probably have to endure for another few years. So we do feel that we are not very happy. Do all of you don't feel very happy? What are people smiling very nicely? Happy?
Great.
A week ago it was like...
So do we feel that there are constraints in our life that we want to, because when we talk about liberated, that's that we feel that we are not very free as what we want it to be. We feel like there are some constraints. Sometimes it's unhappiness. Sometimes you just feel like things doesn't go according to our will, or sometimes you just do not know what you want to do. All these are unease. So we want to free from this kind of feeling. Is that right? Anything else that you want to be free from? So you want to free from
suffering
from all different forms. So we do feel that we are not very free as what we want it to be. We want to be free. But what kind of freedom are you thinking of? So you are thinking that we are not very free now. We are not at ease as what we want it to be. So the at ease state that you are imagining now, what kind of ease are you thinking of? Like, if you are free, how free would it be, and what kind of happiness? Jerry was saying that unhappiness, so you want to have no unhappiness. So the state of happy that you are thinking of. Can you describe the happy state that you are looking forward to?
Nirvana. Free the cycle of life and death.
Cycle of life and death. Okay, that's a very profound question. Another technical term. So, yes, we do feel that we want happiness. So, that is a more profound state. And in normal sense, people say, we want to be happy. I'm not free. Kids feel like mom is nagging all the time. I'm not free. I want to run away from home. So they say, when I run away from home, I'll be free. And that's what youngsters usually think. So you all get out from home, you come to university, you're living by yourself with your flatmates and so on. Are you very free?
Not so much.
So is it different from like when you were at home, like mom said, I have to come back at 6 o'clock, come back and eat my dinner and cannot go out at night and things like that. You thought, I'm not free. My friend's mom allowed them to go out at night for movie. My mom didn't allow me that, and you feel not free. So now you get to overseas to study. Quite a lot of you are international students, so you're living by yourself. you can go and watch movie until 2 o'clock in the morning. Your mom do not know. You are free. But do you feel really free? So sometimes we think about freedom, but then when we get to that state, we feel like, but I'm still not very free. Some people thought, if I have iPhone 8, I'll be very, very, very happy. I'll be the happiest person in the world. You line up overnight outside the Apple store, and you're the first one who get the iPhone 8. Very happy. And after that, do you think that you're the happiest person in the world? It lasts for a few minutes only. The next person got theirs, and then compare, and that's it. But we are quite short-sighted, and we can't perceive how, what kind of happiness we are looking for. And we do not know what is real happiness. And someone was saying that, yeah, we went attachment, right? We thought, if I have iPhone 8, I will be very, very happy. So, but once you got it, you feel like, it's just as such. Yes, I got the phone. Yeah, that's it. But does it mean everything? You see, before and after, that's very interesting. Before you got iPhone 8, you thought your mind is thinking about iPhone 8, or everything is about iPhone 8. Forgot about your assignment, forgot about everything. Oh, I just need to plan a sale, how to get to the Apple store, how to line up, how to queue up, how to make sure that you got the first one. But once you got it, does it really means it's your whole life? It's not. But we are quite short-sighted. Our scope of thinking is very narrow. Once when our desire takes us away, it's like it's only this thing that will bring us happiness. But it is not. And the worst is that our attachment to this thing will lead us to more suffering. You line up outside the Apple store, you want to be the first one who get the iPhone 8, but someone is before you, was before you, so you line up, never mind, I get the first batch, that's good enough. Come to your turn, run out of stock. So, what I go to, what you probably will be jumping and punching, getting very, very angry. Because your desire is not fulfilled. Because we attach to that expectation. We didn't think carefully. Is it that important? Next week, you can buy it at any store. It's just the first day when it's released, you go to the Apple store. So what's the difference to get it 1 week later? Is it such a big deal? But when desire drives us, take us away, we can be crazy. We can be really crazy. And it give ourselves a lot of unhappiness. So attachment to this irrational expectation, desire, caused suffering. So all this make us not at ease. So when we talk about happiness, we need to really know what are the things that can bring us happiness, what are the things that cause us unhappiness. And so when we talk about we want to be liberated from this entanglement, so we need to identify that what have entangled us, what has tied us down. We say it's this, all this desire is like a string that tie us down. You like, if some of you have this love to your pillow. You always need your pillow when you sleep. So you go to a retreat, you need to carry a pillow. You go to camping, you need to carry a pillow. Without your pillow, you just can't sleep. So you can't enjoy your retreat, you can't enjoy your camping. But if you are a person who can just sleep on any pillow, or even without pillow, you'll be at ease anywhere. So just simple things as such, an attachment can cause suffering and give us extra burden. Alright? So we need to identify the cause of suffering come from our desire and attachment. And what's behind this desire and attachment is our ignorance. That not knowing the truth, like we talk about iPhone 8. If you think about the time when iPhone 4 was out, iPhone 5 was out, iPhone 7 was out, every time you go and queue out outside the Apple store, spend the night, whole night there standing, hungry, and then how long does your iPhone 5 last before the new one is being released? Is it 1 year or 2 years?
1 year.
Only 1 year. And then every year you repeat the history. So have you ever reviewed and think that is it worthwhile? And if you can sort of review and check the feelings before you get your iPhone 4 until the time when you get iPhone 5 and recall all this experience that before you have iPhone 4, your urge, that kind of desire, and then once you get it, the kind of feeling, and then when iPhone 5 is out, your feelings towards iPhone 4, it's like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want this anymore. But you chase for it, and you are the one who want to chuck it. We need to learn from this experience and use our time and energy in a better way. Alright, I'm not telling you not to have iPhone 8, but we use it in a rational way. Right? So that is, firstly, we need to identify what we caught ourselves in and what have made us feel that we are entangled. And because of this desire and ignorance attaching to ourselves and the things around us in an unnecessary way, we bog ourselves down and we make ourselves like a piece of very strong magnet that carry a lot of things on us, make us very, very heavy. So we always think that the more we have, the more secure that I have, the more at peace and happy that I will be. But we didn't realize that the more that we have, the more self-protective we become, and the more sensitive we become, the more uneasy we will be. That's something that we need to realize. And because of that self-attachment to things around us, that we cannot recognize the truth of the things around us and ourselves, we always crave for the things to be with us all the time. So when we get the things, we feel happy, but then at the same time we have a sense of insecurity, that worry that when will this thing be lost or broken or will not belong to us anymore. So before we get what we want, we have this crazy desire that drives us, that we really, the wanting mind, the strong wanting mind, make us very restless. And when we have it, we are worried that when are we going to lose it. When we lose it, we feel very, very sad. So when are we going to be happy? There's no moment you're going to be happy. This is what we mean by our desire and ignorance cause suffering. And because of not understanding the truth, we attach to whatever we have, attached to ourselves. So when we come to the blink of death, we still crave for continuous existence. We don't want ourselves to die. We want to continue to live. We can't let go of whatever we have in this world. So of course, this craving for continuous existence, which is a synonym to ignorance, basically will carry us forward to look for another new life. And so because of our craving for continuous existence, we crave for a new life and we're reborn again and again. And reborn again and again, is what this gentleman has said, is one of the greatest suffering. Because going around the cycle of life and death again and again, not knowing the truth, want happiness, but didn't get real happiness, and at the end of the life, do not know where are we going to reborn to, Are we going to have a better life or worse life, or a life that's not as good as this life, is a great suffering. Because one of the suffering that we have is, like all of you, if you're all very confident, like Alina can sing very well, he goes to the stage, she has no fear, singing, enjoy, happy. But if you ask me to go and sing, oh, I'm going to be like, do not know what to do, I can't sleep for the whole night, because of no confidence, not knowing what to do. Right? If you have a presentation, and you know very clearly your stuff, and you, no matter what the lecturer or the tutor or your friends is going to question you during the presentation, you know your contents very, very well, and you're very expert in that area, you're just very happy to answer all kinds of questions without any fear. But because of when we are in the cycle of life and death, we are still caught in ignorance. We do not know where are we going to, where are we going to reborn to, and what we are doing, is it right? Is it going to pave the way to a good future? And all this uncertainty is a great suffering. So when we say that we want to be liberated, firstly, of course, we want to be liberated from the unhappiness, and then ultimately we want to be liberated from the cycle of life and death to realize the truth. Okay, so that's why we talk about the path of liberation. That is, in a more profound sense, when we talk about path of liberation, is to gradually reduce our afflictions and ignorance, and then lead us to realization of the truth, and finally end the cycle of life and death. This is called the path of liberation. So of course, everyone who practices Buddhism may have different aim or different level of understanding. So not everyone, so when we ask some people who are practicing Buddhism, we say, why do you practice Buddhism? Why do you practice Buddhism? Good answer, because this is the topic for today. What about you? Why do you want to practice Buddhism?
Because it calms myself.
It calms yourself, yes. Calming yourself is very important. Because we talk about liberation, we want to end suffering. If we can't calm ourselves, then our desire and our emotion takes us away. Then you find that you lost your rationality, even if you have listened to teachings, but you always can't calm yourself. You lost your mindfulness, then we still get carried away by our desire and ignorance, and it's difficult to improve. So calming ourselves is very important. Any others have any other reason why you want to learn Buddhism? Tas?
It's really good to cliche. Nirvana, but yeah.
You want to attend Nirvana? Jerry?
Live better.
Huh?
Want to live better.
You want to live better? Okay. Want to make sure that we have a more peaceful and happy life. Confidence, a life that is confidence, yes. No, lead a life with a clear mind, knowing what to do. That's very important, yes. Alina?
Find out more about life in general and answering the questions I have in mind.
Okay, so yeah, I think it's quite similar to what Jerry says, that what to find out more about what life is about and how we can live a life.
How it came about,
with more confidence and what to do. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Michelle, is it?
Yeah. To seek peacefulness.
Seek peacefulness. Okay. All right. So, in other words, everyone do feel that there's some unease in ourselves. We want to have more happiness and more confidence and more clear mind. So, when we talk about the path of liberation, as we say, we want to disentangle ourselves from suffering, disentangle ourselves from desire and ignorance. So it is important when we practice the path of liberation, first we have to identify the cause of suffering actually come from our ignorance and desire, and we have the mind to detach from these afflictions, the greed, anger, hatred, jealousy, so, and also understand that this world that we're living in is impermanent, our life is impermanent, and that, so it's basically understanding, try to slowly develop the understanding of the truth. So this, a person who wants to walk on the path of liberation need to have a renounced mind, a mind to renounce from afflictions. Greed, anger, hatred, jealousy, arrogance, selfishness, basically it's a path of purification. Okay, and so the way of practice is to cultivate, is to start with the Buddha's, what the Buddha say, that's precepts, concentration, wisdom. It's always a very, basically you find that this is the steps that that the Buddha teach. So of course within precepts, there are 5 precepts, there are 8 precepts that you can uphold, and basically is to tell us to use the precepts like a mirror to guide our own action, as a mirror to reflect, am I going beyond the line? It is also like a guideline, a yardstick for us. Okay, and practicing concentration, calming our mind. So the precepts allow us to understand what are the things that we need to do, why am I thinking of doing this? But the Buddha said, no, this is not right. So it's a check, it's a good guideline for us to check ourselves. Some people say, oh, why do I need to have the precepts? Some people say, oh, as long as I'm a good person, that's good enough. Why do I need to believe in any religion and then have to follow the guidelines? As long as I'm a good person, that's good enough. What do you think about this way of saying? You may have friends as such who are not religious. Say, I think as long as I'm a good person, that's good enough. I don't want to believe in any religion. Or I don't want to follow any precepts. Or sometimes even have people who say, I believe in the Buddha, but as long as I good respect to the Buddha, that is good enough.
Presented, that in itself is a limitation of that person.
Yeah, that's right.
So they try and increase their receptivity and then they'll be more receptive to the teachings or everything that's around them, which can be a lesson.
Yes. So you find that, yes, when people say that, oh, as long as I'm a good person, why do I need to follow the precepts? Sometimes personal judgment will then jump in. So at times, our ego may take us away. And so why do I need to follow the precepts as I'm a good person? But how do you define a good person? It's your own judgment. So when you use your own judgment, remember we are still ordinary person, we still have our self-centeredness and selfishness. So when we make judgment, we tend to also weigh in our self-benefit. And it is difficult to be very fair. And a lot of time you find that we can also try to rationalize things and make excuses to make sure that what we are doing, we think that it's right. we are very good in rationalizing things. So that's why the precepts help us to understand, yes, you want to have some desire, you want to have some enjoyment, make sure you do not bring harm to others. So Buddha is a neutral person. Because if we also say, as long as I'm a good person, it's good. But how do you define good and bad? How do you define good and bad? A question that I believe all of you have been told by your parents, do good, do not do bad. And we have parents here who tell our kids to do good and not to do bad. If your kids ask you, Mom, what is good and what is bad? How are you going to answer?
listen to me, that's good.
It's a very important question, because if our definition for good and bad is not right, then we may be thinking that we are doing good thing, but in fact we are not doing a perfectly good thing. And so we thought we are doing a good thing that should lead to a good effect, but because in fact what our definition is wrong, so therefore our dream effect did not come. See, that's something very, very important. No one knows how to justify good and bad. That's very important, yes?
So it's the labels that our mind attaches to things, something's good, something's bad, but even that is an attachment expectation, and it's subjective. What's good for me might not be good for somebody else. Mm. And then there's universal truths that are applicable to every single being equally, and it's not good or bad, it's just zero. It's like what you're talking about, neutrality. There's no positive or negative, it's just what it is. And that's the kind of truth that we're supposed to be working.
That's probably the, to the, that's beyond the relativity.
Yeah.
But from the level that we are in, we need to start from where we are.
Yeah.
First, because we can't just say everything is in nature, everything is equal in nature. But then from the point we are in as an ordinary person, we need to start with some kind of judgment to make sure that we gradually develop the wholesome mind in ourselves, and then be able to learn to embrace others, and finally be able to see the truth. Yeah. So, because if from the level that we are in, we start to say everything is empty, everything is non-discriminated, then someone go and rob the bank and say, this money is not real, I can take it away. That's not right. Since it's not real, why do you want to take it away? Right?
Say if you try to divide it into, I think you mentioned already the wholesome mind and the unwholesome state of mind.
Yeah.
So say like the unwholesome state of mind is the one that's attached to greed, delusion, and jealousy.
Mm.
Greed, anger, jealousy. Whereas the opposite would be generosity, wisdom, and what's the other one? Yep.
Mm. So when we talk about good or wholesomeness, firstly, we need to make sure that when we say that we are trying to do a good deed or wholesome deed, when you say a good deed, it should be helping others, all right? So the mind should be thinking of benefiting others. So the mind should be free from greed, anger, jealousy, arrogance, and selfishness. That's the first thing, the mind. Then secondly, also, we want to make sure that the outcome benefit others. So sometimes you find that different philosophers may have different in the world. Well, we have different philosophies, and you find that philosophers in the world have different definition for good and bad. Some people tend to look at the mind. As long as the mind is good, it's good. But then there are others who tend to look at the outcome. As long as the outcome help others, that's considered good. But from Buddhism point of view, we need to look at both aspects. One is that our mind needs to be pure as we can, that is, the mind should be free from greed, anger, hatred, jealousy, arrogance, selfishness. The mind is just trying to wish other well. That's important. So intention is to bring happiness to others. And secondly, we need to also think carefully, how do we want to put across this our good intention in the right way so that it benefit the other party. So the outcome should benefit the other party. So there are people who may have good heart, they are very helpful, but then they are not very skillful. So you find that people who like to help and they are very helpful, but sometimes they are very careless, not mindful, and they come to help and then they spill everything all over the place, or they mess up everything. So at the end, people say, don't ask this person to come. Yes, we know that they are very helpful, but he mess up everything all the time. So, but no one is getting angry with the person, but then it's not helpful. So if that is the case, then your intention is to help others, but the end result is it doesn't help. then that is not very, very good. Not perfect, all right? But, and then at the same time, you got people who help others with a mind of arrogance. For example, someone is rich. They donated $2,000 to the hospital, and they request us to help to advertise their business or to have a reporter reporting their generosity as a kind of advertisement for themselves. Right? The money that's given does help the hospital to buy an equipment. But then from the person's point of view, the mind is actually not thinking of, although it's helping, yes, it's part of generosity, but then there's a big portion of using this as opportunity for self-advertising. So it's a bit like paying money for advertisement. So in other words, this person's mind is not very pure. There's an arrogant and selfish purpose there. So from the mindset point of view, this is not a perfect good deed as well. Because when the Buddha teach us about generosity, doing good, it is a kind of practice. As we said, the practice of Buddhism, if we put it in a very simple term, it is a path of purification. Whether it's generosity, practicing generosity, whether it's upholding precepts, it is actually a path of purification. That is, we use that action, that approach, to reflect and purify our mind. Then you find that when you start to do that, everything you do in life, if you are able to relate to, is my mind selfish? Is my mind thinking of helping others? Do I have self-benefit expectation or things as such? If you're able to reflect yourself all the time and reduce the selfish elements, then we are actually practicing. So practicing is not just sitting down there every day, sitting in retreat, it's called practicing. Practicing Buddhism has to be applied in daily life. Reflect according to the teachings on how we relate to one another. And that's why there sometimes people ask me, I've been learning the Buddhism for quite a while, but I'm not sure if I'm on the right track. I say a very easy way to test yourself is that after you learn Buddhism, do you feel happier? That you feel more confidence in dealing with things in life? And then secondly, after learning Buddhism, your relationship with your friends, is it more harmony? Or your friends start to feel that you are so strange, weird, arrogant, and no one wants to friend with you anymore? Then there must be something wrong. Because there are people who, after learning Buddhism, and they start to become, start to feel like they want to go in depth into practice, and they start to see that all these friends have been listening to Dharma for so long, and they are still not diligent. I don't want to friend with them anymore. So now, when you have that thought, it's an arrogant thought. Although you are diligent, which is good, but then we should not look down on others, because others may have their different approach in learning, or they may have other things that entangle them. We need to have patience in encouraging one another and not allow our arrogance to take us away. So you can see that the guidelines of the Buddha, precepts, is actually set based on the teachings of cause and effect and wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. So because when we say how to justify wholesomeness and unwholesomeness, how to justify good and bad, sometimes when certain incident happen and you sit down, is it good or bad? It's difficult to analyze sometimes. So to make it easier, the Buddha set the precepts. No killing, no stealing, no adultery. Okay, so instead of analyzing, okay, is adultery good? What is my mindset? What is the outcome? that takes quite a while. And also sometimes people, as we say, people tend to use their own way of thinking to rationalize their action. So, but if the Buddha set a line, so don't go beyond that line. Go beyond that line is definitely questionable. That make it a bit easier. All right. So that's why the precepts help us to reflect ourselves, to reduce our selfish desire. And then with that, checking our mind and understand that we do have desire that from time to time likes to go out of the line. Then we check, well, what is the truth of this desire? Why do I have this urge to go outward where the Buddha said don't go beyond that? Where does this come from? Where does this desire come from? So if you know how to apply this teaching in your daily life, you find that be it precepts, concentration, or wisdom, they are all part of the practice. There are people who say, I have been learning Buddhism for a long while. Precepts is for beginners. I'm now at a stage of concentration and wisdom. We have to understand that whichever state that you are in, precepts, concentration, and wisdom are still needed. So, and they can't be segregated. Right? It doesn't mean that, okay, I've finished learning precepts, now I'm practicing concentration, I do not need to follow the precepts anymore. That's not right, right? So, so that's why you find that precepts, concentration, wisdom is very important. And so for the path of liberation, understand the teachings of Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, I think you have learned about that before. Okay? And gradually improve ourselves, reduce our afflictions, develop our concentration and wisdom. And so for the path of purification, when a person slowly reduce their start to understand that what caught ourselves in suffering, what caught ourselves in the cycle of life and death, that is our attachment to this self. We do not understand what this self is about. We thought this is a fixed eye. But the Buddha always said, look into this eye. Is it a fixed, unchangeable entity? If it's a fixed, unchangeable entity, how can you grow from baby to who you are now? Because if it's a fixed thing, non-changeable, then it should be always this size. But then why you will slowly grow and grow, even your hair grow, right? And sometimes you become skinny, sometimes you put on weight. Why? And for young people, pimples start to come, right? Unhappy. So why? So it shows that there are a lot of things in our body. There are a lot of cells in our body. And the cell keep growing, and it got metabolism rise and fall. So the baby slowly grow and grow and grow. The legs become longer and longer, the hands become longer and longer, and the teeth grow, right? Otherwise, we will be just born as such, and as such, that's it. There will be no movement. That's scary, right? So we talk about impermanence. Things are subject to change. We tend to think about the negative part, or impermanent, everything's going to change to be bad. But didn't realize that, in fact, changes is very important. Without changes, we don't have our civilization. Without changes, there's no improvement. Without changes, there won't be growing, development. So change, it's just, so impermanent just means change. And why things can change? Because they are a combination of many causes and conditions, and they are not fixed. So if you look into our body, our physical part, if you think carefully, we have all these cells that make up our body, we have our nervous system, we have our blood vessel, we have our organs, you got your heart, your stomach, your intestine, your eyes, your nose, your ears, everything in the right place, the right, right spot. Otherwise, you become a monster. Right? So, you find that there's so many things that make up our this body. Not only that, we have our thinking from just now until now. The thinking keep changing, as I explained. Your thinking follow what I say, and you keep thinking of your change, right? So you find that our thinking keep changing as well. So the Buddha said, look at this body that we have. We think that, I don't want to die. I want to continue to live. But in fact, this I that we have, do we actually think that it's a fixed I don't want to die, I want to continue to live? In fact, this I has got so many things that make it up, right? And in fact, as I always say, you cannot use solid line, it has to be dotted line, because new conditions can come in, sometimes the flu virus comes in. You see, why there are new things that comes in? Because causes and conditions can change. And then you take some antibiotic and fight with it. And then this one goes away. Right? And then you eat more food inside. And then it starts to grow a bit bigger. Right? So that's why you can fix it. And every moment is changing. And then it goes to the toilet. And then you've lost a few. So you find that a lot of changes going on. So when you say I, which I are you talking about? This, there are movement, there are many causes and conditions, and there are a lot of movement all the time. All those of you, all of you probably have studied science before in your high school. We talk about molecules, atoms, right? So you talk about atoms, we say atoms, then you got the neutron, the proton, the electron. Electron keeps orbiting, and then you got the atoms and atoms that can the covalent bonding. I forgot my chemistry. I'm not sure, right? So and then you can make a molecule. Is that right? So and so even the atoms itself, every moment is changing. So that's why it is not a fixed thing. Its identity can be changed. And so this is what we mean by everything arises in causes and conditions, and it is impermanent. It doesn't have a fixed identity. It's not as rigid as what we call. And in Buddhism, a state as such, a situation as such, that shows that it is actually quite flexible. It's not a fixed entity. We use the word emptiness. So emptiness basically means that everything arises as causes and conditions. It is ever changing. It's not a fixed entity. It doesn't have a fixed identity. And we use the word emptiness. But emptiness is not a very good word because people tend to fall into the English connotation of empty. It's actually borrow the term to describe a state as such, but it's very difficult to describe. So when we use that word, we tend to think, oh, it's empty. So sometimes people start to think of as like void. So why is saying everything is empty? And so they thought, but we are still here. So the Buddha, when the Buddha said emptiness, he doesn't mean that there's nothing at all. Hollow. He doesn't mean it's hollow. It basically means that everything is subject to change that arises due to causes and conditions. They are not fixed. There's always room for improvement. For example, we have this room. This is a classroom, right? Because this classroom was empty. So this classroom can be used as a lecture room. It can also be used as a Dharma talk room. It can also be used as a dance rehearsal room. Like all of you have done it. And sometimes a meeting room. Because it has a space, so it depends on what conditions it comes in. So it may be an economic class. And then when the economic students go away, and then you got the chemistry students that comes in, then it becomes a chemistry class. See, so this, because it's a space, it's empty in nature, it depends on the condition that comes in, it temporarily forms an existence, a phenomena. So this existence are causes and conditions, right? A lot of different causes and conditions form an existence, and temporarily it forms a phenomena. But this phenomena itself is still subject to change. So the time comes, it's an economic class, students come in, lecturer comes in, and the class is going on. In fact, when the class is going on, every moment, you find that the contents will be different, and sometimes there are people who sneak out to the toilet, and then there are people who come late, who comes in. You find that there are changes that's going on as well. And then at the end, times come, the class is over, everyone move out. So it arises due to causes and conditions, it ceases according to causes and conditions. And that's what we mean by emptiness. It doesn't have a fixed, it's not a fixed, unchangeable entity. So the Buddha basically tells us that our body is as such as well. It is formed by a physical factor, so we say it's the form, the physical factor. Even within the physical factor, you have your blood vessel, your bones, and everything, which is so many things already, and which are always in the process of changing. And then we have this feeling, sensation or feeling, right? So think about this, we say we see something we like, and we hear something we love it. So where does this sound come from? Where does this desire come from? Sometimes we say the desire drives us crazy. Our eyes attached to things. But think about, where does this view, why are we so attached to this thing? Is this thing come to cling to us? Or our eyes cling to it? Where is that urge? Where does that urge come from? How solid and how permanent is this urge? Interesting, right? So we say that we have this sensation, and then we start to have our perception of what is this? Is this nice or not nice? I like it or I dislike it? And it also can be influenced by our past upbringing and thinking. For example, you see a diamond. And now, so if you give the diamond to a baby, they probably wouldn't attach to it. Look at it. This is the same as a stone. But if I give a diamond to you, in fact, the feeling is the same as a stone. No different. But because of our upbringing, we have been told diamond is something very precious, very expensive, and it's very beautiful. Then you start to, because of this perception, we start to think, I want it, you see. So, but for a baby, they touch it, some people may like it, dislike it, but they don't have the perception, they have not been taught that this is a very expensive thing, and they do not know what does mean by expensive. And their beauty concept is different as well. What they like is teddy bear. Right? So they won't have that background knowledge about it. Then the decision is to chuck it away. But because of the perception that we have, that we are taught, so you find that this perception, our perception to it can be influenced by what we have been taught. And that's why we say family upbringing, the childhood upbringing is actually very important. And with that perception, we start to have all kinds of mental formation, Then you say, oh, this diamond is so nice. I want to try to ask who is this and try to see if this person can give it to me. And I try to be very nice to this person. I try to sweet talk to this person. Whatever thing you can think of, try to get what you want. So, and then we start to have this consciousness of that I really want this, and I want to, these are the approach that I'm going to take, and so it's sort of transform into your awareness in and try to do things of what you want. So basically that's how we act every day. This is our physical body. This is the physical part, and this is the mental aspect. So our everyday activity is basically these two aspects work together actively, and that's how our activities. So we are actually not a fixed, unchangeable I as such. So what we say is that we want to, we crave for continuous existence. What did I say? Who is going on the cycle of life and death? In fact, is this what we call the five aggregates. The five aggregates means like category or five groups of things, alright? First is the physical things, and then you got the sensation part, you got the perception, the mental formation, and the consciousness. And these five things work together actively, that's an active human being. So the Buddha tried to tell us that in fact our this I is not as fixed as what we thought. It is just a five aggregate which is always in the process of changing. It is the causes and conditions together, and it is always changing. But we ignorantly cling on to it as a fixed I. And then with that I, we start to develop a self-concept, and then start to have self-centeredness, and then we start to lead our life oriented around this I. In fact, sometimes the Buddha say, this I, if you think carefully and analyze it, it's just like the banana tree. You peel it, at the end, it's empty. But we cling on to it as a solid, unchangeable thing. And so that's what we meant by emptiness. Okay, so it means everything arises in the causes and conditions, it is ever changing. And if we can realize this truth, that, okay, this I is ever changing. In fact, all phenomena is ever changing. So, someone says something, sometimes someone criticizes me, I feel very upset. Okay, think about this I that was being criticized, and you come back home feeling very, very upset, very, very angry. Alright, so you think about it. How does that word come to my ear? We say, so, this is the five aggregates. So sometimes the Buddha also used the six sense organs and how the 18 spheres on how things come to us. So you think about it, we have our ear, right? And you need to have a sound. And it travels through the air. If it's vacuum, you probably wouldn't hear it. Right? Travel through your ear, and you understand that language. If we do understand that language, it doesn't affect you. And so it comes to you, and you start to have that sensation and then perception, mental formation, and say, I'm angry. So it's actually a series of information that transfer to you, and then you start to decide that you want to be angry. But how true is that word? Where is that word that makes you angry? In that person's mouth? In the air? In your ear? Or in your mind? Can you cling it onto it and not let it go? But we tend to just keep thinking about it, and become more and more angry and not letting go. We are emphasizing or reinforce our memory. Some people, when I was talking about impermanence, I said, is there anything that's permanent? There was once that a student said, yes, memory is permanent. I said, why? This memory is permanent? People are very forgetful these days. But there are some sad incident or the incident that not happy, it just can't let it go. What you study for exam is very, very impermanent. Before you get to the exam hall, everything is gone. But the incident that make you unhappy, it's just after 10 years, 20 years, it just can't go away. And I say, it doesn't mean that memory is permanent. It can't be just, if we say it's universal truth, then it should be applied everywhere at any time, right? It can't be the exam stuff gone away very quickly, and then there are things that stay there for such a long time. Even when we start talking about study for exam, we have to understand, how do we reinforce our memory? We study again and again, and that's why we need revision, right? The more you revise, the more it sink into your mind, the more you can remember. So, for incident that we feel unhappy, you see, when someone criticizes you, you get very angry and you keep replay what the person say in your mind. How can this person say this again, this to me? And you start to tell your friend, you know, he or she said this to me last night. And then 2 weeks later, so, you know, he was saying this. And so you keep repeating that and narrate to others again and again and again. If you apply this in revising for your exam, you did very well. And that's why at the end, you find that you can't let it go because you're reinforcing it yourself. And this reinforcing is a kind of causes and conditions as well. Right? So as we say, if we want to cultivate, we say cultivate our loving kindness or cultivate our wisdom. It's accumulated as well. Like you listen to Dharma talk, we talk about good and bad. I think we talked about this last year, but you forgot. So I have to say, ask the question again. And same thing. So the more I ask you, next year I ask you again, maybe some of you will remember. Hopefully. Right? So it's a kind of reinforcing and it's adding in the causes and conditions in line with it and you find that it become better, right? So the Buddha teach us many methods for us to understand that this body and mind that we have, it is not that permanent, it is empty in nature. And if we can understand that and start by practicing reducing our selfishness, learn to be, so the good way to start practicing is to learn to put ourselves in others' position rather than always thinking of from our perspective. So a very good start will be putting ourselves in others' position, be more considerate to others. In that way, we first start with reducing our selfishness and understand that, yes, our life relies on a lot of people's support. Although you are all university students, intellects looks like very important in the society, but if you look around, we need to have a sense of appreciation and gratitude to everyone around us. Without people making these tables and chairs, you think you can enjoy here? Without people having laying all these carpets here with the air conditioning and the light, can you enjoy? We wake up in the morning, we just turn on the light, take for granted. But who have supplied the electricity? A lot of people who pull the cable, generate the electricity, that make it so convenient for you. And all these lights that we have, the fluorescent light or the LED light, whatever it is, right? We just switch on. Never think that there are a lot of people behind that. So therefore, we need to have sense of gratitude towards others that we are all, in even this society that we are in, we are interrelated, and we are just like one part, we are playing one role. We are like an internet, right? So you saw the badminton net, right? The net that we have. So you got a lot of knots, you see? A lot of knots. We are just one of it. And if any part is not right, you find that gradually it's broken. And that's when supply don't come, you find that you run out of stocks in the supermarket, no rice, no bread, no milk, then it starts to affect you, right? So you find that a lot of convenience that we have in life, with your phone, whatever you want, Google, that's easy. But how many people are behind it? There's a lot of people. We need to have sense of appreciation. You go to the toilet, just flush. Easy, right? But who has invented the toilet? Or who has supplied the water? Or who has cleaned the toilet? That's very important. You go to some countries, some underdeveloped country, you find that the toilet system is still very primitive. And it's very dirty. You learn to appreciate this mission to go. Thank you. Thank you for staying. Yeah. And so we need to have sense of appreciation. So the way to start practicing, reducing our self-centeredness and be able to understand that to learn to have less self-attachment, but rather to embrace others, is a starting point before we talk about realizing emptiness and nirvana. So we need to reduce our self-centeredness by putting ourselves in others' position, learn to be considerate to one another, understand that we are our lives rely on a lot of people's support. And then secondly, understand that everyone can improve. So do not look down on others. So just always check. Don't allow our arrogance to grow. Understand that we are all caught in different levels of afflictions. Some people are more arrogant. Some people are more greedy. Some people are easily jealous. But we are not perfect. But we all have the same nature. That is, we are all not fixed. We all can change. So if we can help one another in the right way, in helping one another to develop a more wholesome mind, a mind of loving kindness and compassion, then not only that we make ourselves a happier person, make others a happier person, and then you find that if everyone is in harmony, our society and world will be more happy as well. And at the end of the day, it's like the Buddha and the Bodhisattva, they wish everyone can improve. Because if we want ourselves to improve alone, and we want ourselves to purify ourselves, but people around us are full of afflictions, it's just like you just clean your own house, make sure your inside your house is very clean, but when you walk out of your house, the drainage is blocked, rubbish everywhere, the neighborhood is dirty, you find that it's still not perfect. So as a Buddhist practitioner, we not only that we want to purify ourselves, but we also want to share the good teachings with others that encourage everyone to develop a mind of consideration, loving kindness, and compassion. Then in that way, that not only that in your house is clean, but gradually we can help the environment to be clean, our people surrounding us to be peaceful and happy as well. Because otherwise, it's, your house is clean, but outside there, the drainage is blocked, everywhere is dirty, rubbish everywhere, the cockroaches and the mice will also come into your house. That's why you find that there are people who try to practice purifying themselves. When they get outside, they get upset. And so their anger comes again. It doesn't work. So that's why loving kindness and compassion to others will help you to reduce selfishness, because that's very important. Because there are people who practice Buddhism, ends up they just I want to be diligent, and they start to disregard others and become they only focus on themselves, and that is not very perfect in terms of learning the Buddha's teaching. Because look at the Buddha. The Buddha always embraced others. The Buddha attained enlightenment. He didn't just enter Nirvana and become a piece of the Asahan himself. He still go around and teach others, right? So now we come to the word Nirvana. Nirvana is a state of mind which is tranquil, peaceful, free from constraint, free from the constraint of time and space. So in other words, a person realizes the truth of of selflessness, understand that we are empty in nature, and so they realize that this self or non-self. So when we say non-self, what does it mean by non-self? So self is like I. It basically means that we are fixed entity, we are independent, we are unchangeable. But in fact, we do not have that characteristic. So we use a negation method to say non-self, negative. Okay, negation method. So it's not saying that the self disappear. It's just saying that we do not have this characteristic of independent, because that is like you do not need to rely on any causes and conditions to exist. Independent, but we are not. And that permanent self, that this is I, fixed, but we are not permanent. And also self-mastery, that we are the master of ourselves. That we can control ourselves. Yes, we want to train our mind to be able to control ourselves, but in fact, are we really self-mastery? You say, I don't want to be sick. The flu virus still attacking. So we can try to tell our mind, right? If we can, we are very well practiced. During Buddha's time, you find the arahats, even finally the Buddha will have to confront the problem of aging, sickness. The physical body is a worldly phenomenon. You are subject to deterioration. And that's something that we cannot control, right? But we can control our mind if we are well practiced. So that's why the Buddha in the sutra always tells us that if someone is sick, the Buddha always encouraged them. The physical body is already in suffering. Make sure that don't add on another suffering. That's the suffering of the mind. If we are able to see this body as a worldly phenomena and use this body as an object of contemplation, then although the physical body is in pain, but then your mind is not in pain. That's very important. So that's why he always say, when someone is sick, it's just like you got an arrow that's already shot on you. And this is something that is difficult for us to avoid, because this body is a worldly phenomena and is subject to change. But do not try to take another arrow and shot onto yourself. Because sometimes there are people who are sick and they start to feel very depressed, and they start to feel themselves useless, and they start to think, oh, I think I'm going to die. And so initially their illness was not that serious, but because of their anxiety and nervousness and their own imagination, high blood pressure comes, and then they have gastric and whatever other problem comes because of mental stress. So the Buddha said, if you already have your physical pain, that's something that's sometimes difficult for us to control. But the mental part is the part that we can control, right? So when we say self, that is self-mastery, is permanent, is independent. But we actually do not have this characteristic. And so therefore we say non-self, okay? So in other words, this self, it's not self-mastery, it is not permanent, it's impermanent, it's not independent, it is combination of causes and conditions. And this is what we meant by emptiness as well. So if a person can realize the truth of non-self, or the truth of emptiness of self, that the self is empty in nature, which means that it is causes and conditions, it is impermanent, as well as phenomena that we see in life are as such as well. This Dharma class that we have, the body night that we have, right? It comes together with many causes and conditions. It exists on that night and it ceases according to the dispersion of the causes and conditions. But so some people say, so is everything's empty in nature, so what's the purpose of doing it? It still has its application. See, we put in effort to form, to organize a body night, and during the preparation, everyone learns something. We learn about cooperation, we learn about the Dharma, we learn about the singing, we learn about dancing, we learn a lot of different skills. And audience who go, learn the message, enrich themselves in their Dharma, and then the function is over, but then some message left behind, and some people may learn about how to rejoice, and then have a better life. It moves on. So in Buddhism we say everything is impermanent, but it doesn't mean that it's useless. It's just like when we say we offer a bunch of flower. We usually have flowers to offer to the Buddha, or you offer a bunch of flower to your mom, right? So the flowers in the hall in front of the shrine, we say flower is impermanent. Why do you want to put that? Put it in the rubbish bin. You need to do that. When the flower is impermanent, but when the flower blossoms, it looks cheerful, it looks refreshed. It makes people who come to the Buddha's shrine looks happy, and helps them to, because of the flower that's fresh, cheerful, make them feel calm and peaceful, and they can pay respect more sincerely. And with their happiness, they turn around, they have a smile to another person, and the person can feel happy and help another person. You find that although the flower is impermanent, it does have its application. So it's the same thing with whatever we say. Emptiness doesn't mean nothing at all. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have any function. But we have to make full use of it, understand that everything is impermanent, good state will not last forever. Make full use of the good state that you are in. Like all of you, we are young and healthy, you are at the most energetic time, you can learn a lot, you can have a lot of energy to do things, and that's why it's only you who can do the body night. You ask someone who is already 30, 40 years old, the energy level is different. It's also when the time causes and conditions are here that we have a group of friends and students of a similar age, similar goal that comes together, that we are able to do that. There are a lot of Buddhist society on campus throughout the whole world. Not many Buddhist society are able to run a Bodhi night as such. So you should feel very honored that you are part of it. So everything is empty in nature, but it does its application. It is positive. It is not a negative thing. Right? So when someone realizes the truth of emptiness of self and the phenomena, they're free from attachment. They understand things are just causes and conditions, and they are able to live with it happily and in harmony. And understand that at that state, they start to understand that it's just they don't start to discriminate things as this is what I like and that's what I do not like. When we discriminate, we actually fall into the trap of boxing it up. Because it's only when we have this and this, we say, I like this, I do not like this. But if you know that they are just causes and conditions, they are just impermanent, if you don't box them up, how are you going to? It's only when it's relative, that you say, I like A, I do not like B. But when you understand its causes and conditions, it's more self. So when it's not self, what? Which is which? That's all in harmony. and that is the state of Nirvana. Oh, yeah. So the state of Nirvana, the mind is a tranquil, free from relativity, and be able to understand the truth as it is, and it's always at peace and at ease. So it's pure. The mind is always pure and wholesome, free from relativity, and tranquil. So that is the state of Nirvana. So in order to attain the state of Nirvana, one has to realize the teaching of emptiness, that's non-self, of that's this I is selfless, and all phenomena are selfless. Yeah. Okay. So that's explaining the three, all these technical terms for today, and it's 9 o'clock now. Did I make it clear? Is there any question that anyone would like to ask?
I have a question myself then. Okay. I might be going to a tangent, but I was reading a while ago on Vimalakirti Sutra.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about the emptiness of duality.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm a bit confused. I'm not sure. Yeah.
What? What do we say? Now, so when you say duality, it's what we mean by the relativity. As we say, when we say, I'm short, you are tall. So it's the two person, right? That is because you start to box me up as one thing, and this is tall one, another thing. So it's only when you have two things, you fix them as two, that you're able to compare and say this is tall, this is short. But in fact, as we said just then, they are actually always, they are not a fixed entity. So you don't think this is a fixed self. They are just causes and conditions, and they are just causes and conditions. So it basically are just causes and conditions, and these are just causes and conditions. So you do not think of this as one thing, and there's one thing.
Oh, yep.
Then that's why you have to see the emptiness of this and emptiness. They are actually empty in nature, so that's why we say the non-self of duality.
Yep, get it.
You understand?
Yep.
Yeah. So that's why we say is that in the Bodhisattva practice, we all in when we start learning, the Buddha always say that everything rise and fall. Observe, things rise and fall, rise and fall. That is actually still teaching us to see that, okay, look, these things exist, and then slowly, like for example, look at the incense, oh, it exists, and it burn away, it rise and fall, rise and fall. So that is still looking at a phenomena, initially exists, and slowly it ceases off. You still cling on to phenomena. But when you realize that, in fact, this phenomena that we are clinging on is nothing that we can cling on. It is causes and conditions, it's ever-changing. And that's why, to a higher state, especially in the Bodhisattva Sutra, or in the, if you are familiar with the Heart Sutra, it said, no rising nor falling. That is looking at the truth itself. When you don't fix it as, you don't cling on to this, to the phenomena as this and this, that this arise and it cease. It's actually the phenomena that we are talking about rising and falling. But if you are talking about the nature of it, which is empty in nature, which is causes and conditions, which is ever changing, it's not fixed entity, since there's no self, what is rising and falling? Okay, so that's basically what your question about. Okay, yes.
When the mind gets ahead of itself and it starts forming an attachment on what nirvana is and the expectations that come with that experience, how do you go, once you realize that, oh, that's what's happening, how do you go?
A very good, easy way to think about it is, okay, I start to attach nirvana as one thing, but you have to understand that nirvana itself is not a one thing. Yeah, it is causes and conditions, it doesn't have a fixed entity. So that's a very good question, because a lot of people tend to think, oh, I want to enter Nirvana. I want to get away from this world and go to Nirvana. Think of Nirvana as a fixed entity. In fact, Nirvana is not a fixed entity. It's a state of mind that's free from constraint, free from time and space, and it is basically doesn't cling on. It has to be free from attachment and clinging. If you still cling on to Nirvana as Nirvana, you are not in Nirvana. Okay. Make sense?
Just kind of go back to basics.
To causes and conditions and impermanence.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's an easier word, because emptiness has this word that we tend to fall into the English connotation and think of hollow and void. So sometimes I keep using the word, everything arises due to causes and conditions, and it is ever changing, it doesn't have a fixed identity. So have to elaborate that way rather than thinking of the word emptiness.
Because when you say nothing, your mind straight away gets panicked.
That's right. We tend to fall into that. Yeah. It's just like I explained to some of them before as well, like the Bodhi Night team this time, we talk about appreciative joy, and sometimes people tend to fall, because appreciative joy, mudita, in Buddhism, is talking about rejoice with others, good deeds, rejoice with others, strength and success and so on. But then some people tend to think, okay, appreciative joy, okay, appreciation. So they start to think of, I appreciate my strength, or I appreciate. They fall into the trap of using appreciation as normal English appreciation. It does have a bit of that meaning, but it doesn't include. It is slightly different to the appreciative joy in Buddhism, and that's why in Buddhism, because in there's a lot of technical terms that we try to translate to English, but it doesn't have. Even the word suffering, the dukkha, is not close enough, but that is the closest words that we can have, and that's why it is very important for us to not fall into the word, because this happened as well when Buddhism was translated to Chinese, when Buddhism first arrived in China. So there were a lot of all these concepts, and so at that time there were Confucianism, there were Taoism, so they tried to borrow some of the words and translate, and that can give to a wrong interpretation as well. So same thing when we translate Buddhism texts, I do some translation work ourselves, and we also try to avoid using some of the sort of very Christian words, because that's already been used by Christianity a lot, and is directly linked to the Christian's interpretation of the certain concept. So when you borrow that word and use it in Buddhism, the reader tends to relate to the pre-concept very easily. So then it can lead to some wrong interpretation. And that's why that is the problem of imperfection of our worldly languages. Yeah. Any other questions?
Oh,
thank you.